Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. A while back, we promised that we would keep folks updated about COVID-19 as it's impacting Zambia and specifically Cantalumba. And so we had a recent conversation with Teresa about that, and we have finally tackled the technology. So we have the great treat this afternoon of getting to hear directly from Teresa. So we recorded the interview that she and I did a few days ago, and Michael has very generously made sure that we can play it live on the show and also even edited the sound to hopefully boost the side, Teresa's side, a little bit. For some reason, the recording of her voice wasn't as clear. Through the interview, you'll hear that I also reflect much of what she says. So even if you're not able to hear everything that Teresa says in the interview, I think you'll be able to really still get the main gist of what she's saying. So with that, Michael, perhaps we could play the recording.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jen. How are you?
That's doing great. We're doing great here on this side. And, you know, as you and Sridevi and I have been talking about so much when we've been checking in these recent weeks, it's amazing how truly everyone, as far as we can tell, you know, everyone in the world really has their attention mainly on the coronavirus, on COVID-19. And it's the same in Zambia. And so, you know, as you well know, Teresa, there are so many folks here on this side of the Atlantic who know so much about the project in Cantalumba and are, you know, just care so much about what have become family to so many people. And so we felt like it was really important to give people an update on what's going on with the coronavirus in Zambia in general, and in particular, how that's impacting the project in Cantalumba and how the team is going about working with all of that. So thank you so much for being with us today to talk about that.
Yes, Jen, thank you again for giving me this opportunity so that I can share my insight from this end, that is my country, Zambia.
As you have said,
it's all over the world and Zambia included. So far here in Zambia, we are having the numbers rising slowly each day on the COVID-19. Especially in Lusaka, we haven't had a case here in Indola. And the government is trying everything possible so that they could contain this virus.
Can I just stop right there and just reflect that, Teresa, because that's so important. As you said, slowly, the numbers are rising slowly, but they are rising. So I think you just told me recently that there's just over 100 cases, a little bit more than 100 cases in the country.
Yes.
And that, as you say, the cases are almost all in Lusaka, which is the capital city of Zambia, and pretty much all of the cases have come in related to international travel, and that the government is working hard to keep the virus contained in that area. And so far, there are no cases in Indola, which is the city where Cantalumba is. Yeah, go ahead, continue.
Yes, Jen. As I had said, they are trying their best to contain the virus. We are on the safe side here in Indola. Even at the property, we are on the safe side, and we are doing everything possible to follow the guidelines that the Minister of Health has put across the web. That is to say, keeping our hands clean, wearing face masks, and stuff like that. So at the property, property, we are doing likewise. The team there that are cooking for the children, they are wearing face masks, and the food right now is being saved as a takeaway. Yes, children are flocking in one by one, and the food is given to them. For the youngest children, their mothers are coming to get their food for them. And we have the wash center at the property where whoever comes in needs to have their hands washed before they enter the gate of the property.
Wow. It's just, I want to underline that as well, Teresa, because it's just amazing. We always talk about how incredible it is that there's a team of people who are feeding 1,000 children every day. And so in addition to that, what they're doing now, as you say, is they're taking all of the safety precautions that are needed. So they're wearing face masks. Everyone is washing their hands so religiously. And that the children are no longer coming in big groups and sitting down inside the dining hall room. They're lining up one by one, keeping their distance between each other. When they come through the gate of the property, there's a whole hand washing station where the grown-ups make sure that the kids really have properly washed their hands. The children then come one by one to collect their lunch, and then they take it home to eat. And I think you said for the little ones, their mothers are coming to collect it, since the little ones have trouble understanding what procedures they need to follow. So the mothers are doing it for them.
Yes, and for the little ones, it's impossible to explain, but they are understanding little by little. They are understanding the song going around where they are singing, saying, COVID-19 is here, you need to wash your hands. It's a very popular song amongst the young ones. You could hear it, them singing. It's like a joke to them. But they keep on saying, wash your hands, COVID-19 is here, things like that.
Oh, that's brilliant, Teresa. That's such a great learning tool. Wow. Because the little ones aren't going to understand. You know, but to give them a way to really put it in their heads, oh, we've got to wash our hands, we've got to wash our hands. That is so great. What a good idea.
Yeah.
So, Teresa, I do want to ask, what's your sense of how the children are doing? Oh, because the other thing we should say is, like everywhere in the world, schools are closed. So all of our children are at home. They're back at home, including, well, two of our nursing students are in school because they're in their last year, which means they've actually been deployed to essentially do what we would call internships at hospitals. But the other two nursing students, they're back at home. All of our girls who have gone off to various schools, they're all back at home. Schools are closed. You know, Zambia is trying to do distance learning. They're doing an amazing job. But, of course, our kids don't have access to cell phones and iPads and computers and that sort of thing. So talk a little bit about how you feel the students and the cooperative members, how are they doing sort of emotionally? How are people feeling?
Jen, emotionally, the mood is frustrating because we believe in teamwork, and being a family, we miss each other because it's not everyone that is going at the same time to the property to do their service each day. We have divided ourselves in two groups that way to keep ourselves safe from COVID-19. So it's a bit frustrating, but they are understanding that this is the way to go. In order to keep ourselves safe, everyone is trying to keep a smile on their faces and be cheerful, do what they can do, just for the little tummies that we had. They're feeding the hungry children. I know 1,000 is just it's a huge number. Feeding these children, and we need to have this big heart. Though the circumstance is just too much for us, but we need to do it. So we need to keep the mood happy, sober, so that the children understand that this is what is going on, and they are free to come and have their meal each day.
Boy, Teresa, it's so moving to hear you describe that. You know, as I think you know, one of the things Mama Sherry is most famous for saying and pointing out over and over is the quality of our lives is determined by the focus of our attention. And that's really what you're describing. We're in a hard time. It is hard. We don't need to deny that. And it's hard for the team. The team is used to teamwork, as you say, coming together, working together. But right now they can't do that. That's not what's going on. As you say, we've really limited the number of cooperative members who come to the property each day. There's only the bare minimum number who's needed to feed those 1,000 children. But as you say, this is the only food these children are getting. So it's not an option to close down the project altogether right now. That's just not something the team was willing to do. And the health department gave us the thumbs up on the way that we're going about it. And so, as you say, it's challenging to be not together as a team, to not be able to, you know, hug and touch and be together and be with the kids in the way that everyone's used to being with the kids. But it's really important. And it makes it that much easier if we can keep that smile on our face, as you say, and keep that cheerful attitude, I think you said, which makes it easier for everybody and really helps all of us to get through it together. It's really inspiring to hear that.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Well, Teresa, that does actually bring us to the end of our time. It goes so quickly. But was there anything else you wanted to add in or say to folks on this side before we close?
What I would love to say to the folks out there is to keep themselves safe, as we are doing so here in Zambia. We love you all, and thank you so much for everything that you are doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as we say, it just gives me goosebumps. We truly are all in this together, all whatever it is, 7 billion of us on the planet. So we can say the same thing. Thank you so much for everything you're doing. Thank you for your well wishes. And I know that all of you are keeping yourselves safe as well. So much love to the whole team there. And we'll, now that we've figured out the technology, Teresa, yay, we'll do this more regularly. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
All right. And what do we say? Let's see. It's nighttime for you, so we'll say Mulale Bueno. Sleep well.
Yes, and it's daytime that side, so I would say Mwombe Bueno.
Mkwai. That means good morning. Have a good day. All right. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Michael, thank you so much for doing that. I mean, I did the interview, but as I hear it, it's so moving. I just, you know, I love that team. I love that woman. I love this project. We all do. So thank you so much for facilitating making that happen.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. It's a labor of love, as you might imagine. So,
yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll turn it over to you and Ashwini. Have a lovely show.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Teresa. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. Good afternoon, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
That was a lovely conversation. I really enjoyed listening to that.
Absolutely, and it's so important, right, that we get that information from it just redefines our sense of community. This is another community that's struggling with the same issues that we're struggling with, and it's so inspiring and fun to see how our family across the pond is dealing with the situation that we're dealing with.
Yes, yes, and with a lot of willingness and attention and love, mm-hmm. I project, mm-hmm. it's just fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fabulous.
And I have announcements here.
Great.
In this unsettling time, we may find ourselves in familiar addictive behaviors, and whatever the content, media, food, shopping, alcohol, we can become slaves to the process of wanting more and more. In a virtual workshop this Sunday, May 10th, we will shine the light of awareness on the suffering-inducing process of addiction. This workshop is free of charge, but please register by noon Pacific time on Friday, May 8th.
Michael, may I just pause you right there?
Sure.
We've been, so just a little bit of context. This is the time when we would be in full retreat season swing. And
yes.
We can't because of the situation that we are in. And it's a difficult time and a challenging time for everybody in terms of economy and all of those things. But what Sherry wanted me to mention is that if we're not doing retreats, we're not generating income. And that will have an effect on how on practice. And so this is not a request for donations, but if you are participating in these workshops that are free of charge and you find yourself able to make a donation to the practice, it would be deeply appreciated so that we don't find ourselves at the end of this year in a situation that feels untenable. So once again, if you're participating in this workshop and you feel like you benefit from it and you find yourself in a position to make a donation either now or in the future, we would welcome that.
Great. Yeah, the phrase that dropped in, Ashwini, was supporting that which supports me. And it's an unbroken circle of giving and receiving. And for me, you know, I've received so much from practice and, you know, gratitude wants to give.
Yes, and it's something that we often talk about, that practice seldom asks, and therefore there's an assumption that there's no need, because the intention of practice is to be, so it's to support, right? And
yes.
And so I'm often told that we need to put it out there. We shouldn't hold back in providing that information to Sangha, right?
Yes.
So if there is a need, then let's talk about it and put it out there, and we'll see what happens, because generosity is what this Sangha is about, and we all support what we love. So, it's not to take it as a treasure or anything else. Whatever you can do, if you can do it, when you can do it, it's appreciated. But to just keep that in awareness.
Yes, yes, wonderful. Thank you, Ashwini. Taking care of our bodies and minds seems more crucial than ever while we ride out the current crisis. An at-home gentle yoga series provides support in cultivating and or strengthening a regular practice of stewarding the body. The yoga sessions, which run from May 22nd to June 12th, incorporate themes from the year-long retreat and other elements of awareness practice. Bring the kind, compassionate support of the privileged environment into your daily life through a 4-week group coaching class beginning in June. Participants in the Living the Privileged Environment at Home class will engage in specific practices that support being present. The virtual class will be held on Mondays, June 8th through 29th. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, press *6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great. Okay, I think we're ready, Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jenny from New Mexico.
Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
Hi. Hello, I'd like to ask a question. This question's come up several times throughout my practice. And it's been a while since I've been practicing, but I always run into this question, and it's almost like there's this duality that it's, you know, kind of picking at the practice and the details or something, but I figured, well, why don't I just ask it?
Wonderful. Yes. Why don't we just ask it? If it's coming up over and over again, it certainly seems to be something to pay attention to, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this question about where we're supposed to be as far as like self-improvement, and not just self-improvement, but also helping yourself. So for instance, if like I want to lose weight or something, how does it become self-improvement and you help yourself? Like Sherry says, you know, I love you exactly as you are, but I'll help you be however you want to be. But then she also says, if you improve yourself, you'll always have a self to improve. Where is the line, you know, between improving yourself and, you know, not improving yourself?
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, Jenny, what is your sense of that? As the question has arisen for you, what do you see about that?
Well, I see that duality probably has a hold of it and doesn't want me to improve myself. And so it kind of picks on that language. And it's like, well, you don't need to improve yourself. So you don't need to do these things to take care of yourself, like lose weight or, you know, then that's just self-improvement. So I think duality has it.
I think that's very powerful to see, right? Because if I'm tracking with what you're saying, Jenny, is what you're sensing is it's put you in opposition. So it tells you that if you are trying to lose weight, then you're doing self-improvement and your spiritual teacher has told you not to do self-improvement and therefore you shouldn't attempt to take care of yourself.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And so you're caught in a conversation about, is this self-improvement or is this losing the self? And if we're in that conversation, I project you don't take care of yourself, right?
Right.
And it's got you where it wants you, which is not in a place where you want to be. Not in the place of, I will do everything, the quote that we were just referring to, right? I love you exactly the way you are, and I help you be any way you want to be, is not a contradiction.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like you saw the answer, that you were simply in a process of ego, which leads to confusion.
It does.
But once you see it, it's not actually contradictory.
So
it's just simply taking you out of the process, right?
Right, yeah, it does. It tends to swoop in and it makes everything confusing and you're trying to do practice and then there's just like these little fine lines that duality can like swoop in and, okay, now we're just going to focus on this and we're not going to do practice. And
Let's noodle and let's be in relationship with me and let's keep looking at this place which seems on surface to be contradictory. Until we figure it out, we don't actually have to be here taking care of ourselves.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that makes more sense, especially when you say take care of yourself, because that is what practice, a large part of practice is taking care of the human so that, you know, we can always be here for others. And so if I go back to I love you exactly as you are and I'll help you be however you want to be, that seems to be the answer to the question because you know, I love you as you are means that I can, you know, take care of myself and eat healthy and that, you know.
Yes. Well, and I don't know if this is what you're saying, but I think you're seeing it. Let me project here all over you, right? That there's an intuition for you that says that somehow if I'm in the process of love and in the process of caring, and in the process of going with what life is intuiting, then the process is being in life. It's not in the process of you're overweight, there's something wrong with you, get on this program, lose weight, or don't do that because somehow or the other, it's not the spiritually right thing to do. You're not in that process.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Which is what I think Sherry points to in terms of we don't want to be in self-improvement, because then there's always a self to be improved. It's pointing to being in an ego process where the ego is simply maintained, right? And that's the process of noodling. I have to work out whether I'm doing the spiritual right thing or the right self-care thing. And in that process, the only thing that's maintained is conditioned mind and attention on conditioned mind. That's the process that's being pointed to that we want to exit.
Yes.
But to be in a process of love and caring and support, there's no ego in that, right? Ego is not being maintained in that.
Okay. Thanks. I'll just focus on the support, because focusing on all the confusion is just making me it just confuses me.
Yes, it takes you out of the present. It doesn't allow you to take care of yourself, and it maintains ego. So we can clearly see that that's a process we don't want to attend to, right?
Exactly, we don't. Because then you're doing that instead of doing the actual taking care of the human.
That's exactly right.
Exactly right. So it kind of bamboozled me there, and I had to ask that question.
Jenny, it did bamboozle you, but you knew the answer.
Okay.
You could see it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't give you the answer. You gave me the answer to the question.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, if you listen back to the call, you'd see that I never said anything except asked you what your sense of it was. And you were able to tell me that you were in a duality, that you were caught in a conditioned process. You were able to see it. Yeah.
I guess I knew that I was being bamboozled.
That's right. And so that's why we do this process of reflecting, right? Because then it assists me to reflect for you where you are.
Okay.
And that is, wow, I have a sense of this.
Yeah.
I just need to check it out.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's true.
All right.
Thank you.
But don't be a stranger.
Michael and Ashwini.
Thank you, very much appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us, Jenny. Ashwini, I just love that conversation. It was so crystal clear, the way duality is laid out and how ego tries to divide us and start that ping pong game, and then stepping back and seeing both sides of it, and I don't want to play that game anymore.
That's right. Yep.
Fabulous. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry, and Ashwini and Michael. It's Janice and Victoria.
Hey, Janice.
Hey, Janice.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be able to be heard. So what am I saying? I was so inspired by the good news update, for sure. That is just a sense of community all over the world.
All of us in the sort of the same, it just reinforces the universality of the situation, right? And how we're all just responding to it.
Yes. I wanted to say how much I appreciated the prompt also about the workshops, and to, you know, yes, they are free and they're freely given, and I can contribute, because that was sort of slipping past me.
Sorry, Janice, you blipped out a little bit for me. Would you say that again, that you...
Yeah, I appreciated the prompt, because I've been partaking in all the weekend workshops that have been happening in lieu of retreats and things, and it had kind of slipped past me that because they're free or freely given, I was not in the mindset of, I could be supporting this financially. And so I think that was a wonderful opportunity for me to hear that, because it's not like I don't want to. It's just I hadn't put two and two together.
That is so beautifully stated, right, Janice? And I think that to receive it that way is so important, that it is just an expansion of awareness. And that's what practice is offering, an expansion of awareness. And it speaks to the heart that wants to give and wants to support what it loves. And from that place, there's such a level of generosity, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I wanted to say that the workshops that are like either on a Saturday or now there's some for Sunday, it just makes the week seamless doing the year-long retreat and virtual meditation and reflective listening buddies and everything else. I kind of feel like I'm on this permanent retreat type of thing. And I'm never far from Sangha. I'm never far from brilliant guidance and brilliant comments and insights that are coming from practitioners that are calling in and being vulnerable. And I have a huge sense of non-separation.
Mm-hmm. Which is in some way, that's so beautifully said too, right, Janice? I mean, that's really what we want to live in. And it's such that paradox that here in a time when we're required to be separate or socially distant or not, you know, physically in connection, there's a way we can live connected to ourselves and connected to that which we love and the people that we love in this way. Right? And it still requires the participation that you're talking about. It's offered. But if people didn't accept the offering, didn't receive the offering and partake of it, then we would not all have a sense of that. But the reason you have a sense of it is because you're engaged in that, right? You're engaged in being part of that, in contributing to that, and therefore receiving it too.
Yes, and the titles of the workshops, sometimes it doesn't indicate quite what conditioning thinks it's going to be about.
Uh-huh.
So the last time it was about sort of handling news or what lit news, and because I'm in the habit of just signing up, I just signed up, but there was this little voice, well, boy, you actually don't listen to much news, and, you know, that might not be it. And the same tonight, you know, just like, okay, well, I don't think you really have any major addictions, so, you know, maybe that one's, you're not going to learn much. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, do I know not to listen to that. I will have so much revealed. So I just want to also encourage that openness to not let conditioning think it knows what the workshops are really going to be about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, and that's true on all levels, right, that we never know. And conditioning's process, and we're looking at control in the year-long retreat, is that it always knows and therefore can direct your action. And so we actually learn something on a process level when we just show up, right? Because life is always enlightening us. Life is always giving us some information. And the workshop just serves as a structure, again, a structure that we participate in for life to reveal whatever it wants to reveal to us within the context of the workshop. And so you're pointing out how conditioning works. It says the content might not be applicable to you, so you're not going to learn something and hope that you won't sign up, so that you're not putting yourself into a structure in which you will learn whatever you learn, you'll see whatever process you need to see, because life will be teaching you, and it may or may not have anything to do with the content, right?
Right, right. Oh, yeah, it was so fun to see that on the weekend. It was, and I just saw how ego is judging all the time, judging me, judging somebody else, something, and how... it's like thoughts and labels escalate with sensations in the body, and then I either just want to run away or give up or I'm out of here. And just sitting still with all that, it's like mm-hmm. this huge storm just passes, and mm-hmm. actually everything is revealed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Everything is revealed. And I project you got to see that you were listening to news. Just
yeah.
the broadcast news from ego, even if you weren't actually engaging with the news that you would define as news, within quotes, right?
Exactly.
Which is the whole point of the workshop.
Yes. That was it. Ego's broadcast station. It's and how vigilant I have to be about turning that one off.
That's right.
Yeah,
especially when it says you don't have to do that, right? Yeah. You'll do anything in order to make sure that you don't turn the spotlight on it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, all.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Ashwini, I loved that conversation, and I appreciated that sense of practice being so seamless throughout the week, that it's offered mm-hmm. so generously on the weekends and the year-long retreat. And I'm never far from Sangha. I'm never more than 24 hours away from Sangha. So it's great.
Yeah. It is truly great. I'm not even finding the words to express what is being pointed to in that. The generosity of the offering, the generosity of the participation, and the possibility it reveals about where we can live and how we can live mm-hmm. that fosters a sense of interconnectedness and belonging and caring for each other and intimacy.
Yes. Yeah. Wonderful. And Ashwini, we're going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, I wanted to remind folks that there's a practice recorder app for iPhone. And it's great for recording and listening, and folks can find it in the iPhone's App Store.
Yeah, but it's great for categorizing recordings.
Yes, that's what
I find it most helpful for.
Yeah, wonderful. And again, that's called Practice Recorder in the iPhone Store. And we have another caller here. Next caller.
Ooh.
You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Isotta from Lima here.
Hi, Isotta.
Oh, how great to talk to you. Oof, I have been identified all day, and then just listening to Teresa and all this snapped me out of it.
It's amazing how that happens, right?
Attention, it's fantastic.
Attention on something inspiring and on what you love, and boy, does it snap us out of the identification.
Yes. Can I tell you about super quickly about the identification I was in? Just so I was coming from a place of scarcity, I think, because I had some information about how to do something for work, which is virtual tours of properties, because we are a real estate agency and we cannot go out and show apartment. And it took me, I don't know, a month to learn how to do this thing, you know. And then a lot of money, time, understanding. And other people were asking me for this information, and I didn't want to give it to them because I was hearing a voice saying, my God, you're going to give them in 2 minutes the information it took you a month to understand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And and I was really stuck in it, you know? And then something that that dropped in that I was going to do, but then I heard Teresa call and my heart opened without needing to do that. But I was thinking about doing a two-handed reporting with the person who was feeling in a place of scarcity. Like, instead of saying, be generous, come on! Like saying, honey, what are you afraid of losing? Or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's a brilliant strategy, right? So you find yourself in the situation where you are frustrated and resistant to providing information for someone. It's what we say in the communication book, right, Isota? It's so important for us to get what's going on for us so that ego is not in charge of how we communicate with someone else.
Yes, because, you know, throughout the day I was being beaten because the message was, generosity is always the answer. This is what practice says.
While
the show was starting, I was like, does it say exactly that? Are you sure? You know, and then this thing came up, you know.
Yeah, because it's never available when we're identified for... This is that exercise we do in the year-long retreat, right, that the karmic conversation holds the answer. It never occurs to us to say, you know what, I don't think I could give you that information because it took me a month to learn. That's what's going on for me. I just am not able to offer you that information right now because I don't see how I can condense 1 month of learning into a two-minute response to you. To say that to somebody would never occur to us, right?
Yes. Well, in this specific...
Because you have a voice in the head saying you've got to be generous, and so you've got to do something that what your intuition is telling you is, I can't do. And I'm being beaten bloody over not being able to do it.
It really didn't cross my mind. You know, until you said that, it was like, wow, I could have said that. It really didn't cross my mind. I didn't even understand that was the problem.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, and so something like a two-handed recording exercise allows us to assist the human being in the identification and then see what life drops in to say, which may or may not be what I just said.
Uh-huh.
But at least we're not caught in the place. We're not so trapped in whatever it is that's going on for me that I'm not available for life to say what it wants to say. But to recognize that that's the position, that's the place I'm in, that I'm super identified, and so my next step is to exit the identification and release Isota from that trap.
You know, I'm standing here with my mouth open because I'm still shocked at the idea that it didn't even cross my mind. But it's okay. I don't know if it's exactly that the message, but it didn't cross my mind that a kind of communication like that could mm-hmm. could work. Mm-hmm. That's fun. I will also make the two-handed recording at the end of this.
Yes, you know, it's what we say about facilitation, right? So sometimes, you know, you'll hear Sherry say, you know, it went right through my mind. I don't know what it is. But that's being present to where you are and just outing where you are. And we're never allowed to do that.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm so thankful that you did it with me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's hidden in plain sight. And I can't see it because of the identification. The information that I am in touch with from life is not allowed to be expressed for whatever reason. Right?
Yeah,
mostly because
wow.
ego has me in that moment.
It's so nice. It's similar to what you were explaining to, some callers ago, that about facilitating to see the answers. How fantastic. I'm so thankful, really.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much. You all take a lot of care, and thank you to everyone and Deep Gasha.
You too, Sota. Wonderful to hear from you.
The same.
Thanks for joining us, Isota. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi. So I've been looking really kind of minutely at what happens when I feel love, and then that love either just stays in the experience of joy and love, like when I have a bird's nest outside with two birds that are making a little home there, and every time they fly up, I get that jolt of joy and love. But there are other times where that love just immediately slides over into a feeling of loss, immediately slides over to a feeling of grief, that love will be lost. And so I've been looking at that.
Aha. Uh-huh. And what are you seeing?
That the more dear it is to me, the closer it hits to home, the more that I either protect myself and kind of like don't feel the love, or I have that experience of going into grief. And so I've been practicing with can I stay with just the love? Like, what's happening there? Like, am I hearing a story? It's such a swift movement. It happens in just like a microsecond. And, but it feels like, you know, almost like, you know how like you learn to play an instrument and you're not even thinking about it. Like your fingers, it's just in your muscle memory. And it kind of feels like that. Like this is like a trained response. That there's not any willfulness or consciousness to it. It's just a deeply worn groove that happens.
Uh-huh. So you're noticing that when you experience love, the movement of the attention from that feeling of love to the to sort of the thought that the love will get lost that produces the sensation of grief. That may lead to a conditioned behavior of protection is just simply part of a process.
Yes, it's like a really deep groove that wow. As soon as there's the experience of love, there is the anticipation, I guess, the expectation of loss.
Mm-hmm. Which is really a shift of attention, right?
Yes, right. It's like my attention is getting, like, just so fast, so mm-hmm. quickly
and
redirected.
Right, absolutely, which is why it feels like it's a well-worn groove, right? Because here's something to explore, right, Melissa, is if I'm present to those birds, I'm present to the birds. The birds fly away, then what I'm present to is the birds flying away. I have to leave my presence to the birds flying away into a story of what that means in order to experience loss. Because if I was here, then I would feel the love when the birds are here, and I would feel the love when the birds are gone. But I would be present to both.
Mm. That's so not how it feels.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So that's one way to play with it, right? Because what you're noticing is a rapid shift of attention from attention on awareness to attention on conditioned mind. And because of the intensity of the sensations, I would project it feels so real.
Mm-hmm. Mhm, mhm, mhm. Yeah, it reminds me of something I heard recently, that the emotion makes it real. The emotion makes it feel real.
Right. And so if grief or loss, it's the conditioned reaction to a movement away from being present in your experience.
Right. Yeah, so I've been practicing, like, how do I come back? Like, how do I come back? How do I come back? And it's
Well, let me ask you this, Melissa.
Really,
Have you explored through the recorder why, but what is going on for her that loss is something to be afraid of or to be protected from? What's going on for her that's something to be avoided? And that's not an intellectual question, because you could have a pat answer to that by just saying, oh, well, she can't stand the sensations, or she's afraid, or her grief would be too intense, or it's an old groove. But to really explore what is being maintained in that avoidance.
Right. The
human condition, you love something because you're attached to it. When that thing goes away from your life, there is an experience of the loss of it. You're present to the loss of it as much as you're present to the love you experience when it exists. That's simply how you are made. So what
Right.
had added to that mixture that experience of loss was something to be avoided and not be present to?
Right. Oh, thank you. That feels like a really helpful direction. Like to go like towards the, to actually go towards what ego has me running away from, the experience of loss, to go towards it and to kind of train in the adequacy to that. That I'm adequate to the experience of loss.
Well, or at least adequate to the experience, to exploring what conditioning says you should avoid.
Yes.
Right?
Yes
you are I mean, we are adequate. We're adequate to any experience that we have because we're having it, right? And
mm-hmm.
so the adequacy that you're pointing to is the willingness to go towards an ego process and say, you can't scare me away from looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm adequate to looking at you. I'm adequate to seeing what you say and examining my beliefs and assumptions and looking at the process of unpacking the process of suffering around this so I could be free of you.
Yeah. Because it feels like the underlying message is, it's not going to be okay. Like,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
It's not going to be okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know that when condition says it's not going to be okay, it's the way, I think we say this in the Transcending Resistance book, there's a boundary that you that conditioning does not want you to cross into being free. And so at that boundary, it frightens us, right? You're not going to be okay. Don't cross this boundary. And it's trained us never to cross the boundary. And that's what we do. We don't cross the boundary because we're told and we believe that we can't stand it if we do. But what you're doing as a practitioner is to go, okay, that boundary is imaginary. I want to be free, so I want to look at it. I want to explore it. I want to see what lies behind the boundary and not just accept your word for the fact that I'm not going to be able to take it.
Right. Right. Wow, that feels so helpful. Like I feel like something in me relaxing, like a big muscle relaxing.
Yeah. And I project it's not having to unpack loss and grief and the old well-worn groove and all of that, right? You just have to turn around and go, okay, well, what's going on for her? You know how to do that. What's going on for her in this in a two-handed recording? And that will allow you to explore all of the conditioning there that that doesn't need to be. And when that falls away, you can be present to the birds and feel the joy, and you can be present to the birds not being there. And if there is a sensation of loss, then you can be present to that. And maybe there isn't an experience of loss. There's just present to the birds not being there. But you get to find out what your experience
Right. Because if I keep being here, then I get to see what's here. Like keep being here. Like okay, we're going over the boundary. Like stay here. What's there?
Exactly. Because right now you're being taken out of your experience.
Right. Well, yeah. My attention's getting redirected before I even know what's happening.
Yes, yeah. You're being controlled, Melissa, in the words of our year long retreat for the week, for the session.
For
right?
the month. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh, thank you. It's very, very helpful.
All right. Well, keep us posted.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Guess so.
Thanks for joining us, Melissa. Another brilliant conversation, Ashwini. And in the interest of time, I'm going to bring on the next caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. It's Todd calling.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Well, as this pandemic has evolved and ramped up over the last, I think now 6 weeks, about a month ago, I was looking to life to see how I could participate or contribute to helping folks. And by way of the monastery, it showed up in a way that really really butted up against a huge karmic disposition I have against, I don't want to, I don't feel like it. And it was, the content was, it was around this mass making project that was offered. And immediately, egocentric, karmic energy self aid went, oh, no, we don't know how to sew. We don't want to participate in that. That's not something we want to do.
And what was the objection, Todd? You don't sew or you don't matter? What was the language of conditioning?
The language was, yeah, you don't know how to sew.
Oh,
you don't have any. You don't have any supplies. You're in another country. There could be issues with, you know, getting involved in a sewing group in the U.S. I'm in Canada. Yeah. So it had a litany. You know, it had a whole list of objections that I couldn't participate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in life's infinite wisdom, which it always does, it seems, to go up against I don't want to, I don't feel like it was, well, I don't know. I'm just going to say yes. There was a request for information. Are you interested? And I didn't know how it was going to evolve, but I said, okay, yes. And then this started about 4 weeks ago. And then 3 weeks ago, I got a notification from the monastery that there was a person in Canada that was requiring a certain amount of masks, and because of shipping cross-border, was someone in Canada, maybe myself, interested in participating. And life again prompted me to say yes. Of course, I didn't know how I was going to do it. Mm-hmm. So, but it was what I kept coming back to was Sherry would often quote Gary Zukav.
Yeah.
5% put it out there, 95% of the universe gets behind you. And mm-hmm. this process and this practice just beautifully unfolded. My neighbor, I went to her, I heard she sewed, and I went to her and I said, oh, I've been invited to participate in the project, but I don't know how to sew. And she said, oh, I'm sewing for a local community thing. I'm doing a sewing thing this weekend. Why don't you come over? I'll teach you how to sew. This was 3 weeks ago. So I spent a weekend sewing for her little project. And then I told her, So then I told her about my project. I said, you know, I've been asked to make a certain amount of masks to ship in Canada. And she said, oh, I've got a spare sewing machine. I'll lend you one. And I've got lots of fabric, and I've got lots of supplies. And I'll set you up. And in the last 2 weeks, I just allowed life to guide me. And I would go to her when I had, you know, questions or you know, the learning curve was quite high because literally I hadn't sewn a stitch till recently. And
you know, Tom,
I
have to stop you right there and say I'm almost close to tears.
Me too.
You know, it's just such a beautiful process that you're illustrating, right? Yeah. And I happen to know, being part of the project, that those 25 masks were going to the daughter of someone in our Sangha who's a nurse.
Yeah, in Montreal. One of the hardest hit areas in Canada,
Yeah, and so just that entire process of how beautifully we're guided when we say yes, and how life uses us as perfect instruments in order to care for care for other forms of life, and all we have to do is to show up, and life will take care of it. You don't you don't know how to sew. Well, we'll do it. But God said yes, and so we'll work out how he can sew and how he can get the supplies and deliver on his heart intention as well as be in service to this person in Montreal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm at a loss for words because I'm sitting here looking at the sewing machine on my table in my kitchen the whole thing, Ashwini, is just a beautiful demonstration of practice and action, how it's so practical, we're so cared for by life. I you're right, all I did was say yes. I had no idea how to do it, what to do, where to go, whatever. And then every step along the way was just there. Mm-hmm. There.
Well, it reminds me of the line that we often say, right? Life has so much more planned for us than we could possibly imagine.
Yeah. And let me tell you, I have had so much fun. I've gotten to know my neighbor so much more. We've spent hours together, which we hadn't before. And, you know, we social distanced, and she's a little bit older. So we first made masks for ourselves. That was the first thing we did. Mm-hmm. And then we wear them when we're together because, you know, we're honoring the scientists that say, you know, 6 feet and, you know, so we're wearing our mask, making masks, and then when I got rolling with it, I just had so much fun because it's learning to love learning. This is a new skill. I'd never done it before. And it just started to just snowball, and I, you know, proficiency got, you know, the first mask might have taken 4 hours. And you know what? I heard someone say recently, on, I think it was the year-long retreat, she was making masks, and she shared that the seam ripper tool, she got very proficient at ripping seams.
Yeah,
that was my first week. I got really good at ripping seams and redoing. But it's great training because you have to really attend to that process, because you just, your mind wanders for a second and you're offline, or you know, you're out of sequence, and it's a great training to pay attention.
Yes. Well, so many things in what you were saying, right, Todd? I mean, first of all, we are what's arising for me as you talk, and what's moving me to tears is that the power of love, right? The power of love that powers us when we're in this process, because there's a way in which being in that learning process is life teaching me. Life teaching me about itself, and life teaching me about me.
Yeah.
And it's the most exquisite relationship we can be in. So at the content level, it's fun. At the practice level, I'm training to pay attention. I'm creating connection. I'm engaging in life. I'm participating. I'm contributing. I feel so good about myself. And I'm going up against something that is exactly the opposite force. And in this entire process, I'm being led by the ultimate teacher, life itself. What a phenomenal place. What a phenomenal place to live.
Ditto, beautifully stated. I have nothing to add to that whole thing you just said. It was you know, it just
privileged. Right?
I mean, it's very much so.
Yeah. And it brings me to a place of how much I truly belong, how much I'm part of the process of life. Because there's such care that's being taken care of me.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And to be invited to participate and willing to say yes and then get cared for in love, and the love of this person and the love of the folks that the mask they'll receive, and hopefully that'll be protect them. And you're right, it really, the whole process, Ashwini, for me was a love and being called to love and accepting that invitation to participate in love is really an experience that is just phenomenal. Like you said, it was really beautiful, and without practice, none of it would have been possible, because I would have said, I don't want to, I don't feel like it, and that would have been the end of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Ego would have shut it down immediately.
Yeah, and so such an encouragement, it's just life giving us the biggest motivation to say yes to it and no to ego. Right?
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Thanks. So a deep gesture and gratitude for all of life support, all of practice, all of Sangha, and for you and Sherry and the monastery and the monks. Thank you.
Well, and deep gesture to you, Todd, because for saying yes, for doing all those years of practice in order to be able to go up against the resistance and say yes.
Yeah.
Because it's such an inspiration. What you just described is such an inspiration for all of us to also say yes.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, it takes all of us, huh? It
takes all of us.
Yeah. Truly. Well, thank you very much. Truly. Truly. Well, thank you. Go happy. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Ashwini.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Todd. And another great show, Ashwini, and I'm really grateful to be here. I'm grateful you're here and all of our callers and listeners, and thank you and go happy.
Thank you, Michael. Go happy, everybody.
Okay, go happy.